Well, welcome to the Afternoon Jams family. Special guest today, she is the 54th Attorney General for the state of Michigan. We want to welcome to the show Attorney General Dana Nessels on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yes, yes. Last time we had you on radio, you were running for office.
And yeah, like a long time ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. So now that's your seat. You running things, and you know you're big time when you got Trump taking shots at you.
Yes, that's very special. I have a lot of trolls on Twitter now, thanks to President Trump. So,
wow. So a lot of stuff to talk about. How are things going so far as Attorney General? How are things moving in the state of Michigan?
Well, obviously things are very different than I ever expected in office. COVID has really thrown everybody for a loop. So the way that we operate is so much different than we would have ever expected. Nearly my entire office operates remotely. So we continue to serve the state and serve the public and to do so from the privacy of our own homes, which is unfortunate because I like to get out and see people. And I really spent a lot of time my first year in office just getting out all over the state to talk to as many people as possible. And now it's hard, you know, you want to be able to relate to people. So that's been difficult. And then, you know, we're preparing for what I think is probably the most important election, not just in our lifetimes, but in the history of the United States of America. And there's a lot of things that are happening in regard to the election that I hope we can talk about today. But, you know, we're very busy getting ramped up to make sure we have free, full, fair elections here in the state of Michigan.
Wow. How confident are you about the fairness of this election process?
Well, I think that, you know, Secretary of State Benson is doing absolutely everything that she can possibly do, that she needs to do, to make sure that the are accurate. The problem that we're both seeing is the massive amount of misinformation that is out there that confuses people. So in terms of us being able to make sure that everybody has the ability to vote and everybody's vote counts, we can do that. But what we need to stay on top of is the misinformation that causes people who are eligible to vote not to vote, or for people to not get their ballot to the right place, because then their vote really won't count. So that's what I'm hoping we can talk about a little bit. Some of the campaigns that have been out there, and they're designed to specifically disenfranchise African-American voters and other communities of that are minority communities, that quite honestly, there are some people that don't want them to vote. And so they're pulling all the stops out to try to put information out there, misinformation, that lead people astray. So people who would otherwise vote don't end up voting, or people vote the wrong way, meaning that their vote might not count.
Wow. So what are you seeing that concerns you?
Well, firstly, there were robocalls that were sent to various different cities and zip codes all around the country, one of them being Detroit, also Chicago and some other places, specifically targeting African-American voters. And what the person on the robocall said is that if you apply to vote absentee, that your personal information will be shared with your creditors and will be shared with law enforcement, so that if you have any outstanding warrants, the police are going to come knocking on your door right after you do that. That is not true. Your information is not shared. When you apply to vote absentee, it does one thing and one thing only. It allows you to vote absentee, and that's it. Another thing that we're seeing is misinformation for people who are returning citizens. So if you are a person that has either a misdemeanor or a felony conviction in your record, our laws here in Michigan, fortunately, are great. As long as you are not currently locked up on a felony charge, you can vote just like any other person. And it means that your rights are automatically restored to vote once you exit the Michigan Department of Corrections or any other facility. All you got to do, register to vote like anybody else. You can register online, michigan.gov/vote, or you could go to your clerk's office and you can register there. It does not matter what your criminal history is, you can legally vote. And I'm saying that because some of the misinformation out there is that not only can you not do it, but if you try, you'll get prosecuted. No. That's completely untrue. Yeah, that's not true. I will tell you, as the top law enforcement official in the state of Michigan. That is a flat out lie. Everyone has the right to vote. The only people who are American citizens who cannot vote is if you are currently doing time in the Michigan Department of Corrections or in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. And other than that, if you're out, it doesn't matter if you're on parole, it doesn't matter if you're on probation, you get to vote.
Wow. John Covington said the misinformation efforts are unbelievable. Are you surprised at the efforts out there to confuse people?
Well, we have a president of the United States who told everybody that they should vote twice, which is a felony in Michigan, and it's a felony under federal law. So am I surprised that this same dude that, you know, that's telling people to vote would put out all this other misinformation? No, I'm not. You know, I'll be honest with you. I've been very clear about, you know, I want to make sure that this election is fair for anybody. And I'll tell you what, if Donald Trump legitimately receives the most votes in the state of Michigan, he ought to win the state of Michigan, right? And certainly I would never do anything to interfere with that process. And Secretary of State Benson is determined to make sure that whoever gets the most votes wins. The end. But I mean, look what the President Trump installed a postmaster general into the post office who has made it his mission to disrupt the United States mail service for no other reason than to make sure that people have a harder time voting absentee and can't get their ballots in. So this is the guy that will literally go to any lengths. We filed a lawsuit in federal court and we won. I mean, we got a preliminary injunction nationwide. Changes that were made at the United States Postal Service have to be retracted just because it's not just that people were gonna have a harder time voting by mail during a pandemic. They weren't getting their prescription medication, their utility bills, their taxes weren't being paid on time. All so that the president can try to disrupt the vote so that he has a better chance of winning, because he knows the more people that vote, the less chances there are that he's going to be president in January.
Wow. Attorney General Dana Anasso here talking about elections. Someone made a comment, Beverly Wells. She misspelled some of the words, but she talked about getting the ID, getting a proper ID at the Secretary of State. It's been kind of troublesome. Getting the ID at the Secretary of State. Have you seen those issues?
Well, I know that there have been delays. Obviously, many of them are COVID-related delays. I will say this, even without ID, go and vote. You can go to your clerk's office. You can do that right now, actually. And you can still cast a provisional ballot. And once they confirm your information, they will count your ballot. So if you have tried to get ID and you can't get ID, go in with any kind of information that you have, whether those are tax bills or electric bill or school ID or whatever you can possibly get. Go into your clerk's office or on election day. I mean, I would rather people go to their clerk's office now, since they're allowed to do that, than wait until the day of the election. But you can still cast a provisional ballot. And then once they confirm your information, they can count that ballot. So don't let it stop you from trying to vote. You don't have to have ID when you vote. It's just a different process.
Are you getting Republicans saying to you, Dana, we agree with you. We just can't go out on, you know, say something publicly?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I just actually talked to somebody who's a longtime Republican, very, very conservative. We have such different views, you know, such different views. But I was just talking to this guy who I'm sure, well, actually, I know for a fact, he's never voted for a Democrat for president before in his life. He's the same age as me, so very old. And he said he just absolutely couldn't believe that here, the president of the United States just made a comment yesterday that if he doesn't like the results of the election, he ain't leaving. He's going to stay and he's going to continue to try to be president of the United States. He's going to use the courts. He's going to try because he's packed the courts and he's now has this opportunity, of course, to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He's going to try to find a Supreme Court justice that can be confirmed that no matter what will rule in his favor if the election is contested. And basically try to steal the election. And so my longtime Republican friend, this is a guy that I've known for probably 30 years now. I mean, he's horrified. He's voting for Biden. And he said he never thought he would vote. Yeah, he said he never thought he'd vote for he believes that when you talk about the rule of law, right? We hear that from Republicans a lot. Rule of law, rule of law. Well, what does that mean if not that you abide by the results of a presidential election? It's insanity. And I guess what I would say to all your listeners and your viewers is, if you have ever felt as though the voting didn't really matter, that it didn't really make a difference, and that whoever ends up in office, your life is going to be the same. So what difference does it make? Let me tell you this. That couldn't be farther from the truth. And that, as much as that's not true, I believe, in any election year, it is particularly not true right now. We have a president that wants to be a king. And the only way to stop that from happening is to make sure that each and every person gets out and votes. It's so easy to do. I'm going to give you some more information. Again, I'm going to repeat this, michigan.gov/vote. You can go right online right now, today. You can go to your clerk's office. You can go to your clerk's office any day during office hours and just vote right there. And you can register and vote in the same day. You can make one trip to do it. Wow. There's so many different ways to vote. And we've made it so easy now. And the voters are the ones who did this, right? We passed a constitutional amendment in 2018, Proposition 3, to make it so easy for anybody to vote absentee anytime. And if you don't want to go to the clerk's office during the day, you can go online, you register, you get your absentee ballot sent to you. And then you can go to a drop. If you don't trust the mail, you don't have to put it in the mail if you don't want to. You can just go right to a drop box, which will be located right outside your clerk's office, any time of the day or night. You don't even have to walk in there, and you just drop it off in the drop box. And you can also track your ballot online. So if you're worried, like, how do I know if my absentee ballot made it to the clerk or not? Again, Michigan.gov. You put your name in, it will tell you exactly where your absentee ballot is. If it's being sent to you, when was it sent out? If you sent it back, did the clerk get it or did the clerk not get it? You can check it online and it'll tell you. So you don't have to go into the clerk's office. You don't have to call. You don't have to go to the polls at all. You can check and you can make sure that your vote counts. And we need as many people to vote as possible because that is the only way we are literally going to be able to take back our country from this autocracy. I don't know what to call it. He wants to install his you know, kids to be the next emperors of our, he thinks this is North Korea, is what I really believe.
Right.
And we have to show him that this is still the United States of America. And yeah, this country has been very unfair to a lot of people for a long time, but we have to make progress and continue to move forward and not just ripped back 30, 40, 50 years, but really from to before the American Revolution is what he's trying to do, quite honestly.
Right. I got to talk to you about police reform, criminal justice reform, and hate groups. Are you seeing a trend of increased hate groups in America, in the state of Michigan?
Substantially so. Yes, absolutely. It's very concerning. We have seen an rise both in militia activity and also white supremacy groups. They often work hand in hand with each other. Sometimes it's hard to distinguish the two from each other. But we have seen a rise in hate crimes against minority communities. There's no question about it. And now it's strange. You know, the things that I think went unsaid or unspoken or were said behind closed doors, it's all out there in the open now. I mean, Donald Trump has made it, you know, racism and extremism popular again. And in my lifetime, I have never seen anything like it. And that's why I established a hate crimes division at the Department of Attorney General, and where we prosecute hate crimes against suspect classes, against, you know, members of minority communities when we see that those crimes occur. And it's why we, you know, are tracking to ensure that we can do everything possible to make certain that we don't have some sort of cataclysmic events occur. So it's very scary, but all I have to say is this: if we get people into office that are not unapologetic racists, you know, that is such a huge step forward right now, because when you have the President of the United States, you know, being an apologist for people who, I mean, honestly, commit mass murder against ethnic communities, I mean, all bets are off the table. In law enforcement, never seen anything in my career. I have been part of the criminal justice system, either as a prosecutor or as a defense attorney for over 25 years. Never seen anything like this before.
Wow. Attorney General Dana Nassel, a couple more questions. When we hear about police reform, criminal justice reform, Big Rob sits on a community policing review board for the city of Muskegon. And one of the biggest concerns he has is that they don't have any teeth, subpoena powers. Would you like to see the police department restructured to the point that the citizens have subpoena power?
Yeah, well, I always think that whenever you can have citizen review boards, it's always helpful and it's always important. I will say something that we've done at our office is I have created a public integrity unit that specifically handles cases that involve allegations of police misconduct. So we have over 21 cases now that we're reviewing involving not just use of excessive force. I know that we tend to think of that the most because that's the most jarring, especially when the person has lost their life at the hands of a police officer. But we also handle cases involving allegations of you know, perjury by police officers, filing false police reports. We just charged an officer out of Jackson County who had lied in the affidavit for a search warrant, which I think that has been rarely done, but we're doing it. Here's my perspective. If it's illegal for everybody else to do, it's illegal for the police to do as well. And they don't get a pass. You don't get to lie on the stand just because you have a badge and a gun. Perjury charges, anything of that nature, falsification of a public record, if it's a crime for everybody else, it's a crime for the police. And in fact, I think the police really have to be held to a higher standard because, you know, no one else has the ability to legally take a life, but, you know, police officers, and they ought to be held to the highest of all possible standards. So what we're doing is we have asked for, I've talked to all 83 prosecutors in the state. I've talked to the sheriffs. I've talked to municipal police departments. And I say to them the same thing. When you have cases involving police misconduct, send them to us, the Department of Attorney General, because we don't work with local law enforcement the same way that the local prosecutors do that. So it just, the perception that there's some sort of bias, or even just the thought that it creates problems in a working relationship between a prosecutor who works with the police every single day. Well, we don't work with the local police like that. So we tend to not know who these folks are, so we can sometimes be a little bit more removed, a little bit more objective. And one of the things that I would like to have, and this actually passed in the United States House of Representatives, but not the Senate, would be to supply state attorneys general, like myself, with the ability to investigate police departments to see, you know, is this a police department that is making traffic stops at a rate of like 5-1 for African Americans, say, or other minority communities versus Caucasians? Right. Is there a disproportionate number of people who were charged, or where there's more force used against some communities than others? I would like to have the power to investigate that, and if need be, to seek a consent judgment with the federal courts for that police department where you have pattern of practice problems. I don't currently have that authority under the law, so that would need to happen either in the state legislature or in Congress, and I'm hopeful that at some point I will have that authority so we can conduct those kinds of investigations. And if you have whole, you know, systemic problems in an entire department, that we can fix those problems.
Well, Attorney General, we get a lot of questions coming in online. We're going to get to some of those. But I got to ask you about what happened in Kentucky with Attorney General there punting, sending it out to a grand jury. Can you explain to us, don't you have the power to charge people, or do you have to send things out to a grand jury?
Now, there are a couple of different ways to charge, and in Michigan, as the state attorney general, and I think it's the same in Kentucky, whereas you can either charge yourself, you can issue a complaint and warrant, is what it's called, and you can issue those charges, or you can go before a grand jury where you present all of the witnesses. There's no defense attorneys there, you know, in fact, the defendants. It's just witnesses that go up on the witness stand, and then there is a presiding judge that then makes the decision as to whether or not there was a sufficient evidence to show that there should be charges issued. So, you know, there are a couple of different ways to do it. Most of the time, we just do the regular complaint and warrant process. I'm not going to say that there have been any times that we have utilized grand juries, because sometimes in rare instances we do that. But could the Kentucky AG just have filed charges? Yes, I believe he could have if he had wanted to do that. I'm not saying what charges should have been filed or whether it was proper to file them, only because I haven't personally reviewed all the evidence he had. And I think for me to go off of news reports, as opposed to seeing the witness statements, seeing the police reports, seeing the audio, seeing hearing the audio, seeing the body cam footage, I think it'd be sort of irresponsible for me to assess whether he made the right decision or not, since I don't have all the evidence. Right. But I do know that there were different ways he could have probably done this had he wanted to.
All right. Some questions online from former city commissioner for the city of Muskegon. Deborah Warren says, any movement on record expungement from the state, especially for cannabis?
Well, actually, you know, I've been pretty busy today, but I think that those bills, if I'm not mistaken, I think they just passed through the Senate. They had already passed through the House, and I think just today. Please fact check me on this. I was just, you know, skimming through my phone, but I thought that a vote was scheduled for today on that. And there was a bill, so if I could talk just specifically about expungement for cannabis. When I first saw these bills go through, it bothered me because it looked like cannabis was being treated like every other crime. And what was upsetting to me about that is that we know for a lot of those cannabis related crimes, they're not crimes anymore. So like breaking and entering, it's still a crime. Assault with intent to murder or assault with intent to do great bodily harm, still a crime. But I thought we should carve out a special type of law just for cannabis offenses that are no longer criminal offenses and now they're totally legal. It should be easier to expunge those than the other kinds of crimes. So I actually drafted my own bill, and I presented it to the Judiciary Committee in the State House, and they heard testimony, and they adopted it in part, not all of it. It would make it much, much easier to expunge misdemeanor offenses, so possession of marijuana or use of marijuana. And then actually you put the burden not on the petitioner who wants to get their record cleared, but on the prosecutor to say, why shouldn't this person get their record cleared? It's up to you, prosecutor, to, you know, make a record, burden of proof to show why this person doesn't deserve to have this expunged. And if they don't, then automatically it gets wiped off their record. I want to say in 60 days. Mm. But they did not adopt the fact that I also wanted it to apply to felonies involving cannabis, as long as it wasn't like over 5 kilos or some tremendous amount. You know, the typical sort of delivery, the dime bag delivery cases, which are most of them involving felonies, possession, intent to deliver, delivery, manufacture of marijuana. I wanted those to be easier to expunge as well. They did not adopt my recommendations, unfortunately. More people won't still be able to get cannabis offenses off their record because they've expanded the whole package. So before, if you had one possession intent to deliver marijuana case and you know, two or more driving while license suspended cases or other really, really minor traffic offenses, that was it, you were done. Right. But now they're expanding everything. And the thing that was so important to me was, I know a lot of people who have criminal records, not because they're criminals, but because they're just too poor to afford to be able to drive an automobile legally because right. of the cost of insurance. And what the big thing about these bills that I wanted to see happen is that for people who had, you know, numerous driving while license suspended infractions, because once you pick up one, you can't drive for the next year. And if you get caught driving again, now it's a driving while license suspended second. And then it goes on and you can't drive for another year. And it goes on and on and on. I want those people to have their records be able to be totally cleared up. No one should be denied a job because they were too poor to be able to legally afford to drive because the cost of auto insurance has been through the roof, you know?
Right.
So I'm pretty excited about that.
Wow. Attorney General Dana Nassar, a few more questions. Hey, Big Robbie, coming to you after this one. Jay Kilgo, Black Lives Matter Muskegon, over Black Lives Matter Muskegon, says, are we getting rid of qualified immunity for the police here in Michigan?
So I have seen some proposals that involve that. I think they're that in the United States House of Representatives, the bill that passed through the House of Representatives involves something in regard to qualified immunity for police. It has not passed through the Senate, and in our state House and Senate, quite honestly, it's very, very unlikely that the Republicans will ever support that. And as you know, the Republicans control the state House and the state Senate right now. So I don't see that even getting a hearing in Michigan unless or until the Republicans control both chambers of either Congress or of the state House.
Wow.
And the state Senate. Right.
On the state level, what can we do about felons that haven't been in trouble or had any contact with the law since you were talking about expungement for 10 years or more? You know, sometimes a person makes a mistake or a couple of mistakes or whatever you want to call it, and they're locked out of things for the rest of their life. You know, how much more punishment does that person have to go through?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And frankly, I think the answer is in those bills that went through the Senate today, because one of them was clean slate legislation, which would mean that after 10 years, that offense automatically falls off your record, just the same way it does with your driver's license, right? When your driver's record,
right.
When you get a speeding ticket or something, or impeding traffic or what have you, after 7 years, it just automatically falls off. Like, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to go to the Secretary of State and petition them to take that off your record. It's just gone. Well, that is in part what the new legislation would do. Now, I don't think it's every kind of felony. I don't know that that applies to like first-degree criminal sexual conduct cases or murder, you know, homicide cases or things like that. But for most criminal offenses, my understanding is, you know, after 10 years, without you, the citizen, having to do anything, I think it just falls off your record. Now, again, I that was in the proposals that passed through the House. Whether or not that has passed the Senate, everybody's going to have to do a quick check on their local news or on, you know, whatever your media resources that you look to see what's happened in the House and Senate. And I could probably get back to you after I have an opportunity to read it myself. But I think that passed.
Okay.
Oh, and wow. Also, I wanted to ask you too, Dana, there's a law in Michigan where a person has to get a letter from a chief or sheriff to wear body armor. Now, why is that? You know, body armor is to protect yourself.
Well, I think it's because there have been so many cases where people have robbed banks, or have been involved in other types of criminal activity. And it's because it enables a person to not just be safe against, I guess, you know, other people and you know, who are members of the public, but also the police. So I will give you an example on it. I don't know if these laws were in effect before or after, but in the 1990s, there was a terrible incident in the Los Angeles area where there was this group of guys that had robbed a bank. And they were armed to the teeth, and they all were wearing body armor, and it made it very hard because they actually had body armor, and they actually had weapons that were superior to what the police officers had. And a lot of people, if I remember this correctly, a lot of people were injured, people died, and it made it very difficult for the police. And so I think the assumption is that if you are not a member of the police and you're wearing body armor, there might be a nefarious reason for it, and that's why they don't want you wearing body armor. So that's my guess, but that law has been on the books as long as I can remember.
Dana, Amir Davis, this is big questions. I can't put it all up on the screen. I'm gonna paraphrase it. Amir Davis from Black Lives Matter, I'm down in Orlando, Florida, talks about police department being infiltrated with hate groups and no investigation on this. How do we weed out these people that come in to these systems with these predetermined mindsets about blacks and minorities?
I'm really glad you asked that question. So I have had that concern myself. I've seen the same reports as other people have. It's of grave concern to me. If you are a person who is a member of any organization that believes in discriminating against any other class of people, you have no business with a badge and gun. in my opinion. You have no business being any part of a police department. So I have actually discussed with legislators, would it be possible for us to have something codified into MCOLs and in the law that if you are a member of any organization that professes hatred towards any particular group, discrimination against any particular group, you know, that you be barred from being certified or licensed as a police officer. And that's actually, I've talked to members of the armed forces who tell me that if you even come in there and you have any of those tattoos that indicate that you're a member of a white supremacy organization, they kick you out. Like, you're gone and that's it. Why do we have those laws as it pertains to police officers? I mean, if they can prove that you are affiliated with any organization like that, you should not be a police officer, period. You just shouldn't. Now, I know that people are going to bring up constitutional issues affiliated with that, but I think we have to try. I think we have to put those policies in place. And I think we should have policies in place with MCOLs, which of course is the supervisory board that oversees licenses for police officers in the state. It should be right in there that, you know, for a variety of different reasons, you can have your license suspended or revoked. And that ought to be one of them.
Wow. You mentioned Jackson County. I think you charging a police officer on the police. It was a police report, something like that.
It was the affidavit to a search warrant.
Okay, affidavit to a search warrant. Is it possible to start seeing police officers getting charged for lying on police reports?
Well, I am. I mean, when you say, is it possible? That's something that my department absolutely, we evaluate. And if we know that that there's probable cause to believe that a police officer lied in a report, then I wouldn't hesitate to charge that person. And let me tell you this, here's what has really bothered me for a long time. And I say this with all due respect to police departments all over the state and police officers all over the state who are good and honest police officers that don't lie in their reports, don't lie on the stand, and would never do something like that, which I believe is the majority of them. But have I seen police officers who absolutely lie in their police reports? I have seen it, and unfortunately, I've seen it over and over again. And here's my experience. So this is something that I don't want to say would typically happen, but in the scenario where you have somebody who has done that, you'll see a police report that will say something. And the video footage is not available right away, either from the patrol car, from the the body cam footage, or sometimes you have video. So many people have video nowadays right outside their house or gas stations or banks or what have you. So you'll see something in a report. The officer will go to a preliminary exam, which is the first hearing, the probable cause hearing, before you ever get any of that back, because sometimes it takes a while to get the video footage. You have to have a discovery request, and the court has to approve the discovery request. And, you know, just sometimes it's a process getting that information. And the officer will testify on the stand. Well, you know, the defendant did the following, had a gun, threw a gun, had narcotics, you know, whatever it is that they're going to testify to that constituted the underlying criminal behavior for which the person has been charged. And then we'll see later on, you know, we'll get the video footage back, and it's absolutely not true at all. And it's not even a close question of like, well, I could kind of see how, all right, they said that he pulled a gun, but really it was a cell phone. I'm not talking about stuff like that. I'm talking about where it's uncontroverted. And once you see it on videotape, you know for a fact that officer lied. Will I charge those cases? All day, every day. All day, every day, I will charge those cases. And I mean, we cannot have a system of justice that anyone has any faith in and that has any integrity at all. If police officers are allowed to testify, it's proven that they have lied under oath and they're not held accountable. Because what I used to see happen is I would have cases like that, both as a prosecutor and a criminal defense attorney, and you know what would happen? Right. They would just dismiss the case. And that was it. Nothing happened.
Yeah, no punishment.
Yeah, and the next day that police officer is back doing the same thing. And the police officer, what does he or she have to lose? Like, well, whatever, I got caught, so what? Case got dismissed. No biggie. I mean, just because somebody might have been sitting in jail for 6 months based on those charges, I mean, that's awful. And it shouldn't be that you have to go out and hire a lawyer who sues the police department. It should be that person shouldn't be allowed to be a police officer anymore. I mean, honestly, I'm not trying to denigrate all police officers. I have so many people in my life that I've known for many years would do anything for any member of the public, put their lives on the line each and every day. But the ones who don't, the ones who engage in that kind of behavior and are totally fine having somebody sit behind bars or even just have a misdemeanor or a felony on their record, having it impact the rest of their lives, knowing that they lied under oath, unacceptable.
Wow. What do you think about
county prosecutors can follow your lead? That Jackson County prosecutor should have charged that officer. I mean, I don't know why.
Well, no, to be fair to the Jackson County prosecutor, there was a conflict of interest in the case, so they referred it to us. And we encouraged that, by the way. If you think there's a conflict of interest for whatever reason, send it to us and we'll handle it. So I honestly, the county prosecutor didn't even have to tell us about it. Do you know what I mean? But they let us know. They put in a special request for a special prosecutor based on a perceived conflict they had, and they sent it to us. So I don't want to denigrate that prosecutor. Okay. He did the right thing.
We give him a pass. Shout out to Jackson. Okay. I worked there for him.
Okay.
Go ahead, Big Rob.
Attorney General, do you think what Kim Worthy did with the police officers that did bad, do you think that's something that we should do on a state level?
Absolutely, I think we should. Let me explain a little bit about what here. Now we're all sort of befuddled, like why do these guys get to still be police officers, right? I mean, if these individuals have lied in a manner that even the county prosecutor acknowledges, I have to ethically turn this information over to defense counsel or to the public, because this is somebody that has been deemed to be somebody who has lied under oath or has committed other kinds of trespasses, that it can be used to impeach their testimony. If you're already in that place, now what good are you as a police officer? You can't be trusted anymore. So this is why I want to reform MPOLs. And these are one of my proposals that I put out, 7 proposals very shortly after the George Floyd murder. We put out 7 proposals as to changes that we could make almost right away that weren't even that expensive. And one of them was to change how you can strip a police officer of their license. It's so hard to do right now. The only way you can strip a police officer of their license is if, one, they get convicted, not charged, but convicted of a felony offense or several high-level enumerated misdemeanors. And the other is if they leave one police department and they don't go to another police department in the course of like 2 years. And then you could also lose your license to be a police officer. But for instance, there's nothing in there that says, you know, we have a number of instances where we've deemed you to have been untruthful or unethical. Nothing you can do about it. You don't get to take that officer's badge. And here's the crazy part. As a lawyer, if I did that, then my client, opposing counsel, the judge, anybody could just make a report to the Attorney Grievance Commission. The Attorney Grievance Commission would do an investigation. And if it was deemed that I had acted inappropriately and committed misconduct, they could take my ticket. They could take my bar card. They could take I could be stripped of my license. But we don't have a way to do that for police officers. All you can do is make a complaint to the police department they work for, and maybe their police department loves them. You know, I mean, you could sue them. You could sue them 100 times. You could get 10 judgments for $100 million a piece, and that police department doesn't have to fire that person.
Well, here's our last question. Your PR person just told us that we got to wrap it up. You got another meeting to go to. So, thanks, Courtney. And this was coming from Courtney's dad. Well, he made a suggestion. I was going to ask him anyway. What is happening in the Flint investigation, the Flint water? Is Governor Snyder going to get charged? I know you probably can't say that right now.
Yeah.
But what is happening with the Flint water situation?
So what we had to do when I got into the office was this. We had the civil cases that were pending in the office where our office was defending state agencies and state actors. And as you know, we at long last settled that case. And so hopefully, you know, at some point soon, we'll have that inked out and it'll be, you know, set in stone and people will start getting, you know, paid in the city of Flint. And a lot of these programs that we agreed to will be put into place and all the rest of it. But we had to build what's known as a conflict wall in the office because I couldn't both, you know, defend these state actors, but then also investigate them for prosecution. So we built a conflict wall. My solicitor general Fadwa Hamoud. I appointed her to be in charge with it, as well as Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy. So they are in charge of those prosecutions. I know that they have spent all day, every day, practically investigating this case now for about a year and a half. I know that seems like a long time, but the problem was when they came into office, they had to look and see everything that had already been done. And what they discovered was they were missing about 19 million documents and, you know, dozens and dozens of devices. So they had to execute search warrants in order to obtain all this information, and they had to start the investigation over. So it seems like a long time, but it's only been a year and a half under me. And I hope that they'll be able to move quickly, and whatever they're gonna do, I'm hoping it will happen sooner rather than later, but I can see that they're working very hard. They're taking this very, very seriously, and they won't rest until anyone who is criminally accountable has been charged.
All right, we gotta do this over again. Thank you so much. 41 minutes. That went quick.
Yeah, have me on anytime. You know, I'm so sorry that I haven't been able to spend time on the west side of the state. This is the first summer of my life, honestly. And I've lived here my whole life that I haven't been out to your neck of the woods during the summer. But because of COVID, it's the first time that I haven't, you know, I usually spend half the summer on the west side, and I'm in Muskegon every single summer. It's my first summer that I haven't, and I really missed it. I have to get out there again soon, even if I don't get to see more than 10 people.
Well, stay safe. Thank you so much. And we definitely got to have you back before election, okay?
I'd love to. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Stay safe.
All right. Take care.